Sound of Hockey episode 193. We're calling this one the Brooks Like episode. Usually I actually quietly know why we're calling it the Brooks Like episode. I actually don't know why we're calling it that. John, why are we calling it that?
Well, Brooks Like, former Seattle Thunderbird.
Not
sure if you knew that.
I actually did not. I'm sure Andy knew that.
Yeah, he definitely knew that.
And fitness guru now,
that's
isn't
right.
he?
Yep. And
do you
adventure
do 192,
adventure
193?
Travel agency,
okay.
Something.
193 push-ups, is that why?
He's... Yeah, I did a COVID workout. I think we maybe talked about that before.
He tells about that.
Early on COVID, he was doing these videos, but he played 776 games in the NHL,
okay,
which is more than I expected because he kind of like disappeared quickly.
We still haven't gotten to the 193.
That's right.
Okay.
Because he was drafted 193. So,
yeah.
Sixth round.
Okay.
What year
you think
that?
I'm going back too much to the well?
You've dipped in that well
last
quite a few
week,
times.
Yeah, last week I didn't do it, but we're coming up to the draft. I think it's a fair.
Okay.
Yeah, we really
seasonal.
Only have three or four.
It's like
more
a seasonal.
That
yeah.
Do that.
Yeah.
It's a seasonal.
You're
yeah.
building anticipation,
then it
I guess.
Becomes kind of obsolete.
Well, we only have like 30 more episodes, and we got to retire that whole bit because there's no more late round draft picks. Anymore, right?
Well, yeah. That bit, yeah, we'll go. But
yeah.
I mean, get creative too. Like you could use decimals, right? Like 19.3.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Somebody had a
just
shooting percentage.
I wanted to, if I was on top of it,
mm-hmm.
I'd have.
Which you're not. That's
I'm
okay.
not. Yeah. That clearly, I'm mailing it in. I'm clearly mailing it in
yes.
doing this. But I'd like to have aggregated points by team of players. So mm-hmm. then I could say, oh, he had a total of 193. Points for the Moose Jaw Warriors. But
okay.
I don't have that technology yeah. just
and,
yet.
And also, yeah. there's at least one person in this room that's not 100% clear on what aggregated means. So this is Sound of Hockey. I am Darren Brown, at Darren Fun Brown on the Twitter, joined as always by Andy Ide. Hello, Andy.
How's it going? I'm at Andy Ide on the Twitter.
And John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL2 Seattle on the Twitter.
And excuse me. Sorry.
Whoa.
And don't forget about at @sound_hockey on the Twitter. Really great Twitter account, if I do say so myself. It's going to be a fun.
Said that
yeah, it's going to be a fun episode. Of this, we're not drunk, believe it or not, of the Sound of Hockey. But we do have a fun guest on this particular episode, Dave Tomlinson, who's the color commentator for the radio broadcast for the Seattle Kraken. We hear a lot about his story, so you'll get to know him a lot.
Fun,
which,
fun interview.
Really fun interview. Yeah. I don't think you've probably heard a lot of his background, would be my guess. So I think it'll be interesting for you. And then we have plenty of Kraken news to talk about. And by and then, I mean now. So let's go ahead and do that.
Wait, no reviews again?
No reviews. I didn't want to sound too whiny, so I was just going to gloss over that, but I appreciate
you.
Your naughty
list is growing.
Yeah, I appreciate you. The naughty list is growing. It's ever growing.
I'll whine about it for you. You don't have to this time.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah. I appreciate that. So the Kraken news that I recently alluded to, when I said plenty, I don't know if I'd say plenty, but there's been some, which is a lot more than... None, which is what it's mostly been in recent weeks. So the big story happened here on Tuesday. We're recording on Tuesday night in Bardown Studios, I should mention. I don't think I said that like I usually
it's
do.
Important detail.
Very important. But Dan Bylsma is the first head coach of the Coachella Valley Firebirds. What was your reaction to this news, John?
I think Andy's been talking about it since he got hired in Charlotte. It kind of confirms what we've been thinking all along. And I think I'm giving Andy a lot of credit because he's like,
I think what
be the first
Dan said though today is important, that even though we kind of suspected that, because why else would he have taken my theory was why would he have taken a step down from the NHL to be an assistant in the AHL?
Yeah, which is really like two steps down. Yeah.
But he got asked about that, or somebody got asked about
somebody
that.
In this room asked him about.
Okay,
it.
Yeah, and he said that he just wanted to go out and prove that he was the guy for the job, but that he knew this was coming. So it doesn't sound like this was a preordained.
No
deal, but kind of like wink, wink, nudge, nudge. He still had to go out and earn it, right? You never want to promise a guy a head coaching job.
How sweet of a gig. I mean, I know he probably would love to be in the NHL, be a head coach in the NHL, but
Coachella Valley.
he's a head coach at Coachette in Palm Springs, right? Like,
not bad.
No, I mean,
brand new arena,
you know, maybe,
brand new everything.
Maybe just kind of. That's where he wants to kind of finish off his career. Not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still only
pro sports franchise down there.
He's still a relatively young man, though. We didn't ask him today, is your goal to get back to the NHL? In retrospect, we probably should have, but I would not be surprised if he's trying to set himself up to go back to the NHL.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, realistically, and that's the thing with coaches when we saw it with Tortorella, right? You figured like, all right, Tortorella's probably done coaching, but sure enough, he gets an opportunity, he jumps at it. I think coaches coach for as long as they possibly can at the highest level that they possibly can. I think he kind of, for lack of a better phrase, he kind of fell on hard times as a coach, right? Because he had bad ending in Buffalo. He allegedly was at odds with the players, which notably one of those players was Jack Eichel, you know, who has had quite the checkered past since then. So then he goes and becomes an assistant in Detroit. Detroit stinks. I don't think that's necessarily on him as an assistant coach, right? But it's just like, you know, one thing led to another, and he kind of, at some point, he was a broadcaster as well. And you have to kind of say, like, if I want to continue this journey, I have to take a step back and prove to people that this is where I belong.
It's a good way to rehab the coaching kind of pedigree too. Like if they go out and they do well with him behind the bench for a couple of years, people might start having interest again.
Totally. So I'm excited about the hire. I mean, I know that like AHL head coach isn't like the most sexy thing in the world, but I thought it was cool that they named him the head coach. And sure enough, I mean, your prognostication over a year ago or whatever it was, Andy, was spot on that was exactly what he was trying to set himself up to do. And he did confirm that. He said, that was on my mind.
Yep.
I think his line was something along the lines
I knew we were going out to Coachella Valley.
Yep. But Ron, I don't know if it was really on Ron's mind, but it was certainly on my mind is what I think he said, something like that. So,
wow.
Yeah. So interesting stuff there. I think it's a smart hire and a good hire, and it's somebody who already kind of has his legs under him, you know, with
and
the
he
Kraken.
Understands the system, right? Like, even though like he it's kind of weird the multi-coaching situation in Charlotte,
but he was in training camp. He was one of the coaches in training camp. We saw him on the ice a lot,
but he's probably already on the same page as Hakstol and kind of what systems and everything. So,
and he has AHL experience as a head coach before he his first stint in the NHL. He was in the AHL for a couple of years as a coach.
Where was he?
Wilkes-Barre. Wilkes-Barre Scranton, and then moved up. And actually, because I wrote the story on his hiring today, so I've done the research very recently, but he went right from playing for the AHL Cincinnati Mighty Ducks, they were called back then. That was how he ended his career as a player. Like the following season, he was assistant coach.
In Cincinnati. I think somehow
Cincinnati.
I knew that.
Now. Everything's coming back to Cincinnati.
It
these
always
days,
does,
right?
Yeah. but yeah, so he then went right into being an assistant coach for the Cincinnati Mighty Ducks. And then I think from there, he went to become the head coach at Wilkes-Barre.
Those three
and then,
words just don't sound right together.
Right. And then he got promoted in season after Michel Therrien got fired. And that was when they won the cup in his, like, he coached half a season and they went right to the Stanley Cup final. So good stuff
Not
there.
Not a big deal.
The other pieces of news that came out of that, well, sort of news, right? But Ron Francis confirmed the dates of development camp, July 10th through 14th. That's all going to be at Kraken Community Iceplex. No indication if that's going to be open to the public, but I don't see why it wouldn't.
I'm guessing it probably will be.
I feel like it's pretty standard to keep those open, but I don't know.
I would imagine. Yeah. And usually they're, you know, they have mini games,
scrimmages and stuff.
Like, yeah. Wide open. So,
yep. The other piece, and this is, I don't know if it's like really any of it's news, but I asked Ron if he had any kind of details to share on what's going to happen with the AHL franchise now, because at the end of the season, he mentioned that like the arenas aren't going to be ready in Palm Springs or Coachella Valley. So, therefore, they're going to start the season here in Seattle. So, I just asked if there's any more details on that. What he shared was that, well, he kind of reconfirmed it, that they are going to start here. He said they're probably going to play some games in the area, but he didn't really confirm what arena that was. Thought that was interesting. Yeah. He also said that they'll move from Seattle to Coachella Valley when the practice arena opens in mid-October, early November, somewhere in that time frame. And then their big arena opens in December. So what's not super clear there is after they move to Coachella Valley, between the time that their practice arena and their main arena opens, I'm not clear where they're going to play.
Well, maybe they have a road trip planned or something.
Yeah, it could be a long road.
Well, and there's so many teams down there, which is the entire point of why that team's down there.
Yeah.
You can easily travel
around. They could just be traveling, and it's not like you're touring the country for 3 weeks. You're literally probably staying in your own hotel
Lots of games
or whatever.
Against the Tucson Roadrunners.
Yeah.
The Ontario Reign.
Yeah. Ontario Reign is like so close.
Yeah.
It's so close. Yep. My take is that seemed earlier than I expected.
For them to be heading down there?
Yeah. I thought they would be up here pretty much through the entire year.
Right. Well, think of that practice facility down there built before the arena. I understand why they would want their own practice facility. But well, the games are then the question, right?
And like, to your point, though, if they play all the games on the road and they're focused very exclusively on nearby teams early on, they get all those games out of the out of the way. You can play the game, get on the bus, go back home, and sleep in your bed. You know, like if it's close enough. Like, So yeah, well, it's not ridiculous. They don't have to. It's, you know, you think about the Islanders, right? They missed the first whatever
two months
where they're actually traveling and staying in hotels and all that time, but it's not going to be like that, I don't think.
And when they're up here, they can pretty much check off Abbotsford and then Calgary because the Heat are moving
or
up
that
here,
Colorado team maybe too. The
I mean, somewhat close. Basically, try to get. Yeah, I don't think they'll bust. Well, I don't know. I don't know how that
Some of those teams works. Will bus, will fly, and then get on a bus and do the circuit.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually if they're doing it East Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
makes sense.
I think that's – I'm kind of excited to see AHL in Seattle.
I think it'll be great, too. Yeah.
I hope we get quite a few games and get access.
And if you want to sponsor us to go to the opening game in
Coachella Valley.
In you, December. The listeners, feel free to just, I don't know, Venmo us or something. But that's probably why you can sponsor that if you really want to. But yeah, good stuff there. The only other kind of nuggets we had from Kraken news were that Matty Beniers is not going to the World Junior Championships, which is not a surprise at all because he's a full-time NHLer now. I don't think there's any, you know, the guys that end up playing in that have NHL experience, those are the guys that are like kind of on the bubble for making their teams. I mean, after his performance at the end of the season, I don't think there's any question he's going to be making the team. So I thought no surprise there. John, you found out that there was a Kraken connection, though, to Team USA's, what do they call it, the development camp or training camp, I guess, for this weird summer World Junior Championship that's happening. What is that connection to the Kraken?
The Kraken seventh-round pick, Justin Janicki, who plays at Notre Dame, was invited to camp. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to make the team. But it's nice to see he's on the radar. And Janicki, I followed his season. He didn't have the strongest start to the season, but then finished kind of strong or with some better numbers, some better playing time. So I think it's a stretch to think he would make the team, but nice to see he's on the radar. And hopefully we get a chance to see him play a little bit.
Yep. Okay. We also have a hypothetical. That sort of relates to the Kraken. Ethan Bear is reportedly being allowed by the Carolina Hurricanes to talk to other teams. He's an RFA. Technically, he doesn't have that right as an RFA, but the team is granting him that permission. He didn't have much of a season there at all after getting traded there for Warren Fogle last season. I think he had like a long bout with COVID. There were a lot of different things and he just didn't get much of a chance to play. So sounds like they're basically saying, yeah, we recognize you're not getting an opportunity here. So talk to some other teams and see what you can figure out. I saw some people commenting on the old Twitter machine that, you know, there's some sort of fit for him in Seattle. I was curious what your guys' thoughts were. Would you, and John, I already know the answer to this because I saw you tweeting about it as well, but would you be interested in having Ethan Bear in Seattle?
Well, I think we've talked about him a little bit before because there was talk of with they would qualify him, which would, if they don't qualify him, that would make him a UFA. And
they
then Seattle,
being the Hurricanes.
The Hurricanes, yes. Sorry.
That's all right.
So I like Ethan Bear. I think he would be an upgrade for our third pair, D. But I don't see him breaking into the top four. And I just feel that there's bigger needs than Ethan Bear or like upgrading our third pair, defensive pair. Now, if we were to sign him, that means we probably lose Cale Fleury, Chalowski, or Hayden Fleury in waivers. Mm-hmm. Or we'd have to expose them in waivers because there's no spot for them.
Too many team, man.
Yeah, and those guys are, I think they're a couple years younger than Bear. So I wouldn't mind signing Bear, but that probably means you need to move somebody out. And I know that if you're kind of playing this out, Carson Soucy's on his last year, and I know there's a lot of interest for him, and they could move him out to get some value and to clear space. But I'm not opposed to it, and I think he would actually be fine fit, but I just don't think he's adding enough value like to make a big deal about it. Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's one of those where I get the sentimentality of it. I get that there's a connection to Seattle.
See, that I don't like.
I get it. I'm saying I get it. I don't necessarily like it, yeah, but I get it. I also grew up in a place where there's a lot of hockey players from the place where I'm from, and every time one of them would be available, it was like, oh my God, we have to sign this guy. And they're like, why? Like, well, because he's from Minnesota.
And he'll want to come. He'll want to be, yeah, that'll be the first place he wants to go.
That's not how you should evaluate, right? We're beyond that at this stage.
And you shouldn't always assume they want to go back to where they are from.
Yeah. but that part aside, like, you know, I've always thought with this team, like, we being the Kraken, they need high-end players. And, like, I think Ethan Bear could eventually be a higher-end player than he is now, but, like, he's not going to move the needle for this team that much. You know, it might be a marginal upgrade. It kind of solves the problem of having too many left-shot D because he's a right shot. So, like, that helps from that standpoint. But I don't know that he makes the team that much better, right? And I'd really rather that they focus their energies on getting one of the more top guys available, you know, rather than something like that. So, a marginal upgrade, maybe. I'd be perfectly fine, perfectly happy if he ends up on the Kraken, but it's not something I'm necessarily clamoring for just because his name is out there.
Yeah. Any thoughts, Andy?
I covered Ethan Bear his whole time in Seattle. You know, I first met him when he was 16. Love the kid. Great kid. I mean, you can't get a better guy. But none of that matters when it comes to hiring, improving your NHL team. And I agree with you guys. I like him. I don't want this to sound like I'm saying he's bad or not any good. I think he's a good defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
But I've thought all along, I don't know how he really improves the Kraken, unless they make some crazy trades on, you know, if draft day they move Soucy or somebody, or there's an opening, then maybe you can think about a guy like that. And there'll be time to do that. But I just don't think he should be the top priority right now. Like you said, Darren, they need guys who can score and have proven to score. They need them mostly up front. I kind of like their defense right now, although I do want a guy who's more of a rusher up the ice with the puck.
Yeah.
but that's not Ethan Bear. That's not his game. He's more in the Vince Dunn kind of mold when it comes to offense. He's good in the zone. He does have a great slap shot. I don't know why, you know, he hasn't really been on the power plays in the NHL. I mean, maybe at the NHL level, it's just not like it was in junior, would be my guess. I'm sure he's been given chances to do that, just hasn't done it consistently enough. You know, I just think you only look at that if somehow the defensive makeup as it stands right now changes drastically. If somebody from that top four gets traded or
hurt or something.
Cut or something. You can think about it, you know. Because is he better than Larson and Dunn right now?
No.
I don't think that's an upgrade. No. I don't think he's gonna play over Oleksiak and Soucy either. I just don't see it. Those are different kind of players than he is, but I just don't see him being a huge improvement. And you have Riker Evans coming up. You know, they may draft another defenseman in a couple weeks.
That's right.
Not that he'll be coming right away, but you got to think ahead here a little bit too. Like, where is he going to fit in?
And
if you sign Bear for 2 years, maybe that doesn't matter. Maybe that's the perfect timing to move in, you know, your draft pick this
year. Right, but I don't think
it's a priority right now. And I think there are other teams out there who do have more of a defensive need who will probably go after him before Seattle even gets a crack at it. No pun intended there.
See what you did there.
But I just want to stress anybody listening that I love me some Ethan Bear. This is not any way disparaging.
I do too.
Ethan Bear, he's a good, I mean, I just can't, I can't talk enough about
if
what
we're
kind
trying
of
to be contenders,
is, kind of
if,
kid
if
he is.
The Kraken's trying to be contenders, which
they've
signaled and, that's what they want to do.
And I'm with John and whoever said it about the sentimentality
it's a tough
of
word.
It.
Yeah, tough word.
That is just nothing to me. That should never be the factor. You know, you sign a player because he's going to help the team win, not because he played his junior 30 miles down the road, right? And I don't think he's going to put that up there. If deciding between two teams, I would guess that Ethan Bear is going to go to the one where he's going to play the most and have the best chance to win.
Yeah.
Or pays him the most.
Well said. We have a quick Stanley Cup final update before we get to our interview with Dave Tomlinson. So it's interesting now. It's gotten interesting. I think there was a piece where it was like, it's 2-0 Avs, and they rolled over the Lightning in game two. So now you start to wonder, is that what's going to happen here? But, I mean, I said it to a friend the other day. I went golfing, actually, and I was like, you know, don't bet against the Stanley Cup champs. I know they're down 2-0, but how do you bet against them after what they did against New York? You know,
I feel like until you see the other team skating around with a cup, you don't count them.
You
out
never
of
count
it.
Out the
Lightning. But I'm gonna. I mean,
it looks like 7-0 battle still.
7-0 in game two. Mm-hmm. That did not look like a contending team at all, and just completely, it looked like they didn't even belong on the ice.
Yeah. But then they turned the tables, didn't they, in game
three?
The
tables have been turned.
They won 6-2.
So, and now you have questions in goal for Colorado because Darcy Kuemper got pulled. Pavel Francouz came in, and, I mean, he did kind of stop the bleeding. He played decent down the stretch of that game.
He played well in the playoffs when they needed him to.
I mean, it is funny, right? Like, it always feels like that somehow ends up being the question for Colorado, right? Like, they had injuries galore, you know, whatever year was that, last year, two
Somebody
seasons
in this
ago.
Exact room mentioned that at the beginning of the playoffs.
And you're spot on. I mean, if they get the right version of Darcy Kuemper, he's one of the best goalies in the league, but sometimes he's not the right version and he's really shaky on certain nights.
Like, and he had injury problems in Arizona too. So,
So,
what did you think about Vasilevskiy not getting pulled after giving up 7 goals?
I actually didn't get to watch, but I think that there's a lot of damage that could theoretically be done to a goalie's psyche there. But it says a lot about him that the following game he came out and was razor sharp.
Well, I believe he's never been pulled in a playoff game.
Okay.
I thought they might start the third because it was, I believe it was 7-0 after two, or maybe 6-0 after two. I thought they would start the third with whoever their backup is. Nobody even knows.
So if I had to guess, if they went into the second period and you thought Elliot was going to come out for the third
period,
I'm willing to bet any money that John Cooper asked him, do you want to stay in or do you want to come
out?
Said, what
stay
do you
in.
Prefer?
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is
and I
crazy.
Kind of admired that a little bit. And it's not that I don't know that he played terribly. I mean, their whole team just
They looked completely stunk. Outmatched.
But there might have been one or two goals he'd want back, but and then it was like it didn't even happen in the next game.
Well, I mean, and he knows he's the best goalie in the world, and the whole team knows he's the best goalie in the world, and every goalie has, even if he was having an off night, every goalie has an off night, but the whole team knows that he's not going to have two in a row also. So, yeah, you leave it up to him at that point, right?
Assuming he said, no, I'm not coming out, I kind of admire that because he could have said, it's 6-0.
No, I'm coming out. I absolutely would have been like, get me a F out of this game.
Give me
game,
a towel to wrap around my neck and a baseball hat.
All right, let's move on to our interview with Dave Tomlinson.
And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson.
We now welcome onto Sound of Hockey a very special guest. He played a 15-year pro career that featured 42 NHL games, the Toronto Maple Leafs, Winnipeg Jets, and Florida Panthers, and 11 seasons in European pro leagues. He's now the radio color commentator for your Seattle Kraken. Welcome to the show, and thanks so much for joining us, Dave Tomlinson. Great to see you.
Thanks for having me on, guys. A lot of news since Seattle Kraken played their last game to date, and then, of course, some big dates coming up with the draft and free agency. So no real offseason when you're talking NHL hockey.
There's really not. That's a good point. And, you know, it was, for me at least, it was my first year covering a team this closely. And, yeah, as the summer has gone on, I'm like, wait a minute, the draft is coming up in, like, a couple of weeks. There really isn't much of a break. It just keeps on going, which I didn't really realize. But I feel like August is kind of that month when everybody just goes away for a while. So maybe that'll be the break, right?
Typically, they do some arbitration dates in August, and that's when everyone's eyes just kind of gloss over.
Yeah.
And then get ready again for training camp in September. So you're right. August is the lull.
Well, you haven't had much of a break. I know you're just off of the World Championship coverage as well, which we'll talk about in a moment. But you did manage to get away for a few days here on what looked like a pretty spectacular fishing trip. So I'm curious what the occasion was there, and did you actually catch anything, or was that just for show?
No, believe it or not, it was a getaway. Nootka Marine Adventures is a company that's got 3 resorts on Vancouver Island, and they like to align themselves with KJR and the Seattle Kraken. So they brought myself out and Kevin Williams, who works in sales for KJR, to experience their resort. And I'm telling you, when they told me it was top notch, you think, okay, yeah, you know, nice website and looks good on paper, but you get out there. You know, the key is when you're out fishing is how good your guides are. And all the guides are locals or guys from around the area. They could tell you everything about the fishing spots. And so yeah, I caught, oh, how much time do we have? I caught, you know, four spring salmon, a coho salmon, three lingcods, two vermilions, a couple of rockfish, up to, it was a total of 130 pounds of fish. So wow. I am going full protein diet this summer. And I don't know if you've ever had fish on cereal, but I think I'm getting to that. It was awesome. So I recommend anybody, if you're looking for a fishing charter trip, that all you need to do is reel it in. You can set your hook if you want and then have fantastic meals. Then you've got a place in Nootka Marine Adventures.
Sounds awesome. Nice. I did a day charter once in Florida, and it was supposed to be like, you can't miss, right? Like, you're absolutely going to catch a bunch of bass, just like the place that we were going to. And I did not catch any fish, but I did manage to hook a bird. Like, ooh. I cast out my lure, and the bird swooped down and picked it up and tried to fly away and did a nosedive right into the bank of the body of water that we were fishing in. So
birds I'm not much are harder to catch than fish when you're fishing. So it takes talent. Set the record there.
Yeah. So really, I probably came out ahead when you think about it that way.
Is right? there a picture of you somewhere, Darren, holding the bird up by the neck?
No, we never got it into the boat. We never got it into the boat. It thankfully got away. We were all like, oh my God, what do we do? I caught a bird. So, anyway, so we mentioned the World Championship. So it looks like that was quite the grind for you. I'd love to ask you a little bit about that experience. I mean, what were your takeaways from that event? It seems like a pretty good time, and one that people here in the U.S. don't know that much about, realistically.
You're right. The World Championship, I will tell you, is a two-week party with a lot of hockey going on. The fans are so passionate for their country, but they all get along with each other, right? It's not like some of the other major European sports where you have clashes. Everyone's there to have a good time. Mm-hmm. I've done the World Championship now, I think this is my fifth or sixth, and I love it. It gives me a peek into some of the up-and-coming players. I know we'll talk draft stuff by like David Juracek and Yurav Slavkovsky, guys like that. I saw Kaapo Kakko play, Patrick Laine. Like, you see some big names play in that tournament. And it's a grind, not only for the teams. You play 7 games in 10 days before you make it to the semifinal and final, which are back-to-back. For the broadcasters, I did it with Dennis Bayak this season, who was the TV play-by-play for the Winnipeg Jets. He's now retired from that gig, but still going to do international hockey for TSN. But he had an 18-year run and longer. You guys know Dennis Bayak from his time with the Seattle Thunderbirds. And so we ended up doing 30 TV games in 14 days.
Wow.
So it is a grind. That's, what, 700 players you have to get to know. And the beauty for me is, with my decade-long pro career in Europe, I was able to get to know the different styles of hockey. And so I knew what to expect with these different teams, but you really realize that the game has gone completely international, with a couple of, you know, kind of minor tweaks that some teams do in the NHL to keep it more North American. But it's a wonderful scouting place. I ran into Ron Francis there, a couple of conversations with him, and you know, you can pluck a player or two from there that is NHL ready if you do your job right.
Did he tell you who he's going to draft?
He didn't. I did say, because I was watching Juracek and watching Marco Kasper, that I would send him a scouting report. And then the thing with the Czechs, they were so skill heavy and veteran laden that Juracek didn't play in a lot of games. He only got in because of injury. And so his tournament wasn't really overwhelming. And Ron Francis, when I would text him, hey, your check's not in, he'd be like, yeah, I got that info already. So I think I got like a passing grade as a scout. Marco Kasper is another story. I thought he was awesome. So he's going to be one of these players that I think will get better once he plays with NHL players. But I didn't get a chance to see some of the, you know, the top guys, because Slovakia was in the other group and I didn't do those games.
So doing 30 games in 14 days like that, and you just mentioned you have so many players to kind of get to know, sort of, as much as you probably can. Do you do all the prep work up front to like try to know everybody, or do you have enough time between, I mean, I imagine there's not that much time between games to really prepare yourself for what's coming, right? Like, does it get easier as the tournament goes on because you've already seen everybody play, or like, how does that all work for you compared to working in the NHL?
Yeah, it is a workload that I wouldn't wish on anybody. So a big shout out to Elite Prospects and HockeyDB and Hockey Reference to get and cross-reference all these players. And for myself, because I've done it for a couple of years now, there is a rhythm you get into. And yes, it does get easier as the tournament goes on. I mean, people think in the hockey broadcasting, like, how do you remember the names of the numbers? Well, you write them down, they're in front of you. So that's not the hard part. I write down their names phonetically. So like if I, you know, got stuck in the washroom and someone else had jumped in to do color, they'd have a sheet in front of them with the names that you couldn't wreck if you just read right what's right in front of you. So that's my kind of trick to make sure I got the pronunciation for every player right every time. But the way I like to do my prep, like I like to find the smaller little stories that you can't find that easily that everybody else has already found. So sure. I do kind of put myself in peril there trying to get that extra piece of information. So it's just, you've got a day and a half to get all your prep work in. TSN sends us some kind of cookie cutter specs on some of the players, the basics. And then I add all the elements to it. You know, there is the, in Austria, there was the team, the Red Bull Salzburg, that, you know, they swept all the way through the playoffs and, you know, they won their series a couple of games in overtime. And so I'm getting the guys that scored the overtime goals and, you know, against which goaltender and things like that, that add color. Here we go. To the broadcast.
Really awesome. It's not just a clever name for your position there. So were you present when Chris Drieger got hurt?
I wasn't. I was already on a plane out of Finland because we do all the way up until the quarterfinals, mm-hmm. and then Gordon Miller and Mike Johnson take over the semifinals and finals. So I had already taken a plane to Germany. I go back to Mannheim anytime I'm over in Europe because I played there a bunch of years and have some good friends there. So I was watching the game as you guys were. And yeah, that was a tough injury, overextended himself, moving to the right. And just hope that he does his rehab all the way through and is ready for some time during the next hockey season.
Yeah, I can't catch a break.
No.
So Darren mentioned your hockey journey before we started. So it's a little bit of a shift of gears here, but you started off growing up in North Vancouver, I believe, right? And you were playing junior hockey up there, and then you end up at Boston University. How did that end up happening? How did you make that choice to go out east?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, this story starts when I was just a little punk, about, you know, 4 years old. My dad was a professional football player. Hmm. He put me into hockey. I loved it. And as I was growing up, I made a goal to play hockey for a living and then be a sports broadcaster. Like, that was just what I wanted to do.
Nice.
Being a Bruins fan as a kid, because Hockey Night in Canada, and, you know, they didn't have Canuck games on at that time. I really liked Bobby Orr and another heart and soul player named Stan Jonathan. He wore number 17. And fought above his height and weight almost every game. And I just thought he was a hardworking guy on a team of stars. So growing up playing hockey, I like to wear number 17. And I was playing at a winter club out here called North Shore Winter Club, which is you know, a real good place for development in hockey. And so you got noticed. Played 1 year junior for the Summerland Buckaroos in the interior of the British Columbia Hockey League.
Great name.
I actually sent... Yes, we had the best jackets in the league. We had the best sound system in the league, and we missed the playoffs. Anyways, I wanted to get a hockey scholarship. I told my parents, hey, I'll go play hockey and get a hockey scholarship. So I actually wrote a letter to the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the University of Alaska Anchorage asking them to scout me and you know, possibly a scholarship. And they blew me off. So the next year, I was traded to the Richmond Sockeyes because the Summerland team had no money. And I said, hey, you got to pay for my sticks and you got to help me with, you know, my car. And they're like, nope.
They spent it all on the sound system.
Yeah, that's right. They needed new jackets. So I was traded to this team, the Richmond Sockeyes, that was building a team for a championship. Orland Kurtenbach, the first ever Canucks captain, mm-hmm. longtime NHLer, one of the toughest guys to ever play, was our coach. And lo and behold, we went on and won the Centennial Cup, the Canadian Championship. So along the way, I was playing with a player by the name of Phil Von Stefanelli. And he was a year younger than I was, really swift skating defenseman. And so universities were coming to scout him. And I'd heard that Boston University was in the crowd. I just thought in my brain, because I was a Bruins fan, that I was going to play hockey in Boston. That was kind of the path I chose for myself. And then when Boston University was out scouting Phil, like, I guess I caught their eye. And so I let it be known that I'd went, like to go to BU. And my season went real well. I led the team in scoring, you know, was quite an offensive dynamo. So I had now 16 different universities sending me, you know, info and wanting to fly me down from North Dakota to Michigan to Anchorage, Alaska. Hey,
I was going to say.
Late, dollar short. In Northern Michigan. And I ended up choosing Boston University. Like, again, I had preordained what I'm supposed to do with my life. So that worked out real well. and had a great time. And it wasn't for the coach there, Jack Parker. He taught me how to play defense because I was only a one-way player. Without him, I would have never played professional hockey. So I credit him for turning a real raw offensive guy into a smart two-way player.
Well, he's so legendary. I mean, is that, do you think that's a big piece of his legend, was like he was able to get kids that were like you, maybe really focused on playing offense and turn them into two-way players and get them ready, not just for the college level, but beyond? Like, do you think that was a big factor in his status as a coach?
Yes, he had a way of getting his message across, whether it was through sarcasm, through tough love, through cracking a couple of jokes. He knew every classic movie going and knew all the lines. So, you know, him and I used to just kind of throw barbs back and forth. I used to, you know, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, I used to do my Damone imitation and hey, wherever you are, it's the place to be. And so that was kind of our little kind of line back and forth to each other when things weren't going well. We'd go, hey, because my nickname was Sniper. Hey, Sniper, wherever you are, it's the place to be. And so what he would do is, he taught us how to play on the other side of the puck, the defensive side of the puck, and angles, and how to check guys, and how to forecheck, and how to, limits time and space on guys. And so we had guys like, Sean McEachran and Tony Monte and Keith Tkachuk and Joe Sacco and Ed Ronan and Peter Ahola. Like, these are all guys I played with. We all turned pro. Like, so it was an impressive group. And of course, he's got bigger names who came after us, and, Chris Drury and, Jack Eichel. I mean, he wasn't there for Eichel. It just keeps going. So Jackie Parker is certainly a coaching legend. And again, I can't thank him enough.
And did you get to go to some Boston Bruins games when you were out there playing?
Yeah, I did. I would sneak into a couple. And then when they were in the finals against Edmonton, a friend of mine, Joe Murphy, who I played minor hockey with, he went to BCHL, and then he went to Michigan State, and then first overall Detroit. When he was with Edmonton, they were playing Boston in the final. And so he got me tickets, and I'd go to a couple of those games. In fact, that game that Peter Klima scored in the third overtime, where he didn't play for the third period in the first two overtimes, I was at that game. So that was quite something.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say you were at the Fog game they had in that series.
I missed the Fog game, but yeah. That was an interesting series. Certainly.
So eventually go pro and you make it to the NHL, and you played for some interesting franchises. You played a little bit for the Maple Leafs, obviously their history, in Winnipeg, and then the Florida Panthers. How different of experiences were those with those three places? You had an expansion team, an original six team, and kind of a Western Canadian team.
Yeah, I mean, with Toronto, so I didn't get drafted in the regular draft. I got drafted in what's called a supplemental draft. And that was basically a draft that the NHL created because they were finding that teams wouldn't draft college players, figured college wasn't competitive enough, and they'd be there for 4 years because nobody left early back then. And then guys would come out of college and be free agents and make, get bidding wars and make big money. So like Adam Oates, and there's a guy by the name of Dwight Mathiasson, and there's another one that went to Detroit. Anyway, so they're signing for $1 million. And so the NHL is like, okay, we got to stop this. We're going to create this draft. So if you were an undrafted college player, you could be drafted in the supplemental draft. And they did it for a handful of years. Then they took a couple of years off, then did it again. And then it's been abolished. But Toronto took me. I was taken in, first round, third overall. So usually when I do public speaking, that's what I start with. I'm a first rounder of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I forget the supplemental draft stuff. Anyway, going to Toronto was, the mecca of hockey, at least they think so. And I got to training camp. They had 17 centermen invited to camp, and eight of them were on one-way contracts. So I thought I could still make that team. And ended up in the minors in St. John's, Newfoundland, which is a great place to play pro hockey to learn. And after my second year in St. John's, like the first year we went to the Calder Cup final, we lost to Barry Melrose and the Adirondack Red Wings in game seven. Uh-huh. So that hurt. my second year was a wonky year, and I didn't look like I was getting enough of a look with the Leafs. So I asked to be traded. So they actually traded me to Florida, and Florida traded me to Winnipeg. Jeez. So for trivia, I was actually the first player that was ever traded away from the Florida Panthers.
Oh, wow.
They'd done deals for draft picks and they'd bought players and everything else. But I was the first guy they ever traded away from their team. So I got back at them and I re-signed with them after a year in Winnipeg. Played a couple of seasons. It was mostly in the minors, put up a couple of 100-point years in the minors, and then said to myself, I want to play hockey for a living and I don't want to, you know, sit on the bench NHL wise. So went to Europe and it was awesome. The team in Mannheim, we won four championships in my first 5 years and I was all set.
So you talked about making that decision to go to Germany, but you had some pretty monster seasons with Cincinnati in the IHL right before. Was it you saw the writing on the wall, like a long term, like, you know, I want to be a really good European player, or you wanted to hold on? Like, give us a little bit more detail on what went into that decision.
Yeah. You know, when I got my call ups in the NHL, you know, where you get drafted along the way really does make a difference for the amount of people that are in your corner or are pushing for you when you get called up. And so I saw guys ahead of me getting called up that I thought I was better players than. So I kind of gave myself a 5-year run in the minors, saying if I'm not a bona fide NHLer, then I'm going to go somewhere where I can make a little bit of money and get some life experience. And the thing about Europe, you know, the season's shorter, it's less physical, the money's better than playing in the minors. And I figured after 5 years and a couple of 100-point seasons and coming close to winning a Turner Cup and coming close to winning a Calder Cup, that, you know, playing another 5 years in the minors wasn't really a challenge for me. And I felt that, you know, the way the NHL was going at the time, like when I did get called up and play in Philadelphia, I was playing against it's an old style telephone. playing against the Legions of Doom, right? You got Lindros and Renberg and LeClaire at all 6'3" and over 200 pounds. I'm like, I'm neither of these. So I'm going to find a place where I can play and make a difference. And European teams kind of know which guys are, you know, in between there. And so I had a couple of places in Germany that were interested. And I chose Mannheim because a teammate of mine that I played with in Cincinnati was over there and he said it was a good experience. And it just so happens I got over to the right team at the right time because they were also building a team to win. And they were right. So great experience. Like basically in layman's terms, you can make in 2 years in Europe what you would take 3 years to make in the minors. So you do the math and you're making out okay.
I always look at those, you know, those kind of journeyman minor leaguers that go over there and have a significant career. It's also like a fun factor, right? Off the ice, it's got to be pretty enjoyable to play in a European country or European league and experience, you know, different cultures that maybe you haven't been exposed to your entire career because you've been so focused on North America. Was there any kind of appeal about the off ice stuff playing in Europe?
There was because, you know, playing hockey in North America, you get to travel all around Canada and the United States and kind of that's it. And, yeah. if I follow my parents' lineage, like, you know, my mom was born in Edmonton and my dad was born in Calgary, but my mom's parents, my grandparents, you know, her dad was born in Poland and her mom was born in Germany. And then on my dad's side, Scotland and Britain. So to get a chance to be over there and you know, kind of follow up on some family lineage was pretty cool. Over in Germany, I got the opportunity to play in a bunch of other countries, which I wouldn't have gotten to see if it wasn't for my hockey career. So landing in Germany, it was all kind of new to me. I knew a couple of German words, you know, Gesundheit and kindergarten. and then I just learned the language as I was over there and kept going. But because we had a successful team, we started playing in that Champions League. Then I'm playing in, you know, different countries, you know, Finland and Sweden and Czech Republic and Russia. And then we had a training camp 1 year in Japan. So now I'm starting to experience different styles of hockey. I played in Switzerland for a short spell and I played against Swiss teams as well. So then I get a feel for all that. And again, because I already had my path chosen, knowing I'm getting into hockey broadcasting, all of a sudden I've got, you know, way more experience than, you know, a guy who played, you know, 10 years all-star in the NHL. He can tell you all about being an all-star, but he can't tell you about what it's like to go to a stinky rink in the Czech Republic and have to do your own laundry. So, you know, I feel I can relate a little bit more to the common hockey fan with my experiences. And, you know, every once in a while when there's a dead spot in the Kraken broadcast, I can bring up some of those talks.
Oh, you probably have some old stories to share. I'm sure there's plenty, whether it be the AHL.
I've got a ton. And the thing about Germany, and especially going over to play in Europe, and you guys have probably heard this talk with other players who go over there, for an import hockey player, if it's a good organization, they find the apartment for you. It's already furnished. And just hand you the keys. You get a car. They pay for your flights, and they pay for your insurance. And you normally negotiate on your net sum. So they pay your, like, do all your paperwork for your taxes. So you just negotiate on the money that's going in your pocket.
Right.
And because I was a little bit too cocky for myself, and that happens at times, but I told the German teams, and if I'm going to come over there, I want a Porsche. Like, come on. So the team in Mannheim, their sponsor was BMW, because different teams have different car sponsors. Right. So I said, okay, well then make it an M3. And so lo and behold, I had an M3 waiting for me in Atlanta, nice. Germany. And I'm a car guy, right? So this is Autobahn M3. You had me. So that was the fun part of it, away from the rank. And there's enough other Canadians over there that you get to know, you know, guys from back home. And then there's a couple of guys I played with that are still coaching over in Europe, and so I see them at some of the world championships. Like Philippe Bozon is still coaching the French team. Him and I, he was my line mate for a couple of seasons. And some other guys that, you know, the names won't ring a bell to you guys, but are known, well-known entities over in Europe that I get a chance to catch up with when I get over there.
I've heard nothing but good things about people who, I've talked to a couple of people who played over there for quite a while, and they loved it. And I put it on my hockey bucket list, because just seeing videos of the crowds that are there, and the crowd at the Slovakia-Germany game at the World Championships was unbelievable. Was it like that back then? Were they hopping up and down and singing and chanting the whole game?
Yeah. So the rink that I played in Mannheim, it's supposed to seat 8,500, but seat is the wrong term, because there's a lot of standing room. And so when we were on our run to, you know, the three championships in a row, I would get to the rink for a 7 o'clock game at 4. And our parking lot, because it was an old rink, it was the type that was a bowl and then had a roof, but the sides were open. Mm. So we'd have to park across the street and then kind of run across this small little highway. But I parked across the street, and I could hear the fans chanting. Oh. Again, I'm getting to the rink at 4. And there's already fans that are chanting and hitting the drums at 4 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game. You nice. Can see people come into the game bringing like a three-step stepladder, because they have their certain place where they're going to stand that they've always stood or put their ladder down and climbed up it. So they're over top the other standing people. And so for one of our games, again, you know, the fire code was 8,500. We had 11,700 people in this, in this building.
Well, that's not even close.
It was nuts. It was crazy. And so for that part, like, and each player had his own song, you know, like nice. they'll cheer for different guys. And so, you know, they called me Tom Tom over there. And then, you know, they would sing the song along the lines of the song Mrs. Robinson, but they would change it to Mr. Tomlinson. And they'd sing and they go, score a goal, Mr. Tomlinson, na, 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 Tomlinson.
That's awesome.
Tomlinson. They'd sing that again. And then they ended up by drumming and going, Tom, Tom, Tomlinson, dun, dun. Like, that's pretty cool. Yeah. So it is a bucket list thing. And just circling back to the World Championship, that is a bucket list item for any hockey fan. Like, you have to choose one. Do, you know,
that is cool.
10 days if you can make it through. I mean, it's just a party on wheels with a whole lot of hockey sprinkled in. And if you choose the right kind of city, like, it's going to be back in Tampere and then Riga next year. But, you know, the next one after that, I think might be the Czech Republic. I don't know. But there are some good spots to go to.
And so you were talking about just a moment ago about your path to broadcasting. What's the origin of that? Like, when did you start realizing you might think about a career after your playing days? And did you know early on, or did somebody kind of trigger something that made you think about it?
Well, I watched Howie Meeker, and I just thought he was quirky and informative and interesting and funny and knowledgeable. And that caught my attention. He used to run a hockey school over in Vancouver Island here. And so he's a well-known in this kind of area, the person, but you know, when he was doing color and hockey net in Canada and some of the things he would say and everything, it just struck with me. That looks like a fun job to do. And going through hockey, I was always one that just kind of analyzed the game as I was playing it and loved talking about it. And it just, it just kind of reinforced that that's what I wanted to do when I was going to finish playing. And so when I was in Vancouver here, there was a radio station called Team 1040. It was bought by TSN, so it eventually ended up being TSN 1040. But the guy that created the idea of having a sports radio station in Vancouver, his name was Paul Carson. He's passed away a few years ago, but he was the impetus for a sports radio station in Vancouver. He's from Winnipeg. I was a former Jet. I was out at a restaurant. You know, my friend who kind of ran the restaurant said he was over there. We know each other a little bit, started talking with him. And he's like, yeah, we got the sports radio station coming. I said, you know, I'd love to come by and take a look. I'd like to get into broadcasting when I'm done hockey. And he's like, yeah, sure. Come on by. And then they threw me on air, which was a bit of a surprise, but I had a ball, right? Like, as you can probably notice, I talk a lot. And so I just thought this would be a cool job to watch hockey games and talk about them. So I just kind of paid attention a little bit more to that aspect of it. And for a couple of summers, I would come back and just freelance for them. And then the summer of 06, when, you know, I'm 38 years old and my hockey career is winding down, they had gotten the rights to the Vancouver Canucks. And so I showed up on their doorstep and I told them I'm going to retire from hockey and work for them. And caught them off guard, but it seemed to work.
And did they give you a BMW or how did that, what car did they give you, I guess, is how I should ask that.
Yes, they gave me nothing but 7 minutes in the evening show. So from 10:30 until 10:37, that was my time. And there's a restaurant here. It was called the Hockey Hotspot. And so, yeah, I had 7 minutes to talk and I would come into the show. It was 9 to 11, the show was. So I'd get in at 8:45 and I'd sit across from the host, Brooke Ward, who I'm still friends with to this day. He broadcasts, does the in-arena stuff for the BC Lions. And I would watch him do the show, you know, solo until my part came. So I'm sitting there for almost an hour and a half across the desk, watching him do what he does and just getting all sorts of information and knowledge and realizing how sports radio, you know, quote unquote, works. And then 10:30 would come around, the red light would come on. He'd ask me a question. And the thing about Brooke, and again, I love him and he's got the radio voice, but he asks really elongated questions. So my 7 minutes would be about 3 minutes of him asking a question and then 2 minutes of me answering and being, okay, Dave, thank you for your time. You're going to dive in tomorrow at 10:30 at the Hockey Hotspot by Sammy J. Peppers. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. But I loved it. And I just kept showing up. So it's kind of a bit of a theme through my life of hockey and broadcasting is, you know, once I have set my mind on something, you may as well just give in because I'm going to persevere.
Well, and you ended up spending a lot of years doing Canucks coverage. And then eventually, obviously, you now are with the Kraken. And I'm curious how that opportunity came up, first of all. And then second, how different has that been going from Vancouver, which is such a, you know, hot, intense market, to a brand new market like Seattle? How different was that coverage for you?
It was different in the way that I enjoyed the Seattle Kraken experience so much because I realized that I'm talking to a wide variety of hockey fans and I love being able to explain why certain things happened or what to look for or what the coach meant when he said this or why the player reacted that way. And in Vancouver, you know, they seem to think they know their hockey. So, you know, really, there's a lot of stress and pressure there on trying to be on it. Not that I don't like to be a perfectionist with my call in Seattle, but what I enjoy about it is that I can be myself a little bit more. And hopefully that's enjoyable for the fans to listen to that, hey, this guy really likes what he's talking about. And I'm starting to just like listening to what he's saying because it sounds like I'm missing out on something. And Everett was and is awesome to work with. Like, for a guy coming into the NHL and having to work solo before his, you know, play-by-play calls without a color guy, and then for us to just kind of hit it off, it was the most rewarding experience in Seattle. And it's great to be on, you know, quote unquote, the ground floor of something that's building and feeling like, you know, you're a part of it. I really enjoyed it. In Vancouver, I was fortunate. My first year, they went to the Stanley Cup final. So that was a learning experience right off the bat. You know, nothing better than calling games for your hometown team, but the opportunity in Seattle has been everything I'd hoped for. And again, in getting the job, you'd be surprised to learn that I reached out and let them know I'm interested. And, you know, it just kind of came around at the right time. And as soon as I got the word, I was there.
Yeah, nice. Very cool. Well, and your chemistry with Everett, I mean, does that just entirely come from the fact that you both have a connection to the Cincinnati Cyclones? Is that where it?
That's probably.
Yes. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. I don't even know the name. Twister, I think, was the name of the mascot, although we didn't have a mascot, the little guy there. Yeah, kind of odd and cool that we both, our paths both ran through Cincy. It's interesting. I talked with Everett after KJR had reached out to me, and for the first time, you know, hi, I'm Dave. Hi, Everett. How you doing? And we just started talking, and 45 minutes later, we're like, okay, got to get going, and we'll talk again. This is part of the process of, I guess, the hiring and getting Everett a part of being comfortable with who gets the job. But we just hit it off. Like, we just hit it off. And so the first time we ever worked together was the first home game, the Vancouver game, because he had COVID and couldn't travel the first five games.
That's
and
right,
my
yeah.
work visa was taking a while to get figured out. So, you know, the first time we were in the same room together working was an NHL game, the home opener. And, you know, when you step on someone's toes, it's a little bit awkward. And I don't think we step on each other's toes, you know, talk over each other till like the fourth game. And I'm like, oh my goodness, like this guy is so easy to work with. I can read his breaks. He lays out for me to finish my stuff and isn't trying to do too much. And it just fit. It just worked. And we get along as well off the ice as we do on the mic. And that was important for him and for me, because there are a lot of duos out there on the radio and on TV that, you know, when they're done work, they just go separate ways. And I can't function in that type of atmosphere. I need to be around someone I enjoy being around, and vice versa.
Awesome.
Well, Everett, I've chatted with him quite a bit, and he gives you a lot of credit for helping sort of show him the ropes, because it is his first job in the NHL. And so, I mean, I'm curious if you've kind of learned things from him too. I mean, obviously he comes from a very different type of coverage that he was just doing, what, a year and a half ago, right? Are there things that you've picked up from him in this process of working with him?
Well, I mean, he just brightens a room when he walks in. And for myself, like, as strange as it sounds, you know, I love talking hockey and talking to people about hockey. And I know that the airwaves go out to a bunch of people, but I am a little bit more reserved when I walk into a room. And I realize that, you know, especially when it's at Climate Pledge, you know, people are excited that, you know, they're meeting somebody that's a part of the Kraken broadcast or part of the team in their minds. And so just his ability to be open and friendly to everybody and have time for everybody is something that I thought I did. And then noticing how he interacts with the public, I realized, you know, I can't just be the guy that's beside Everett. And so that's something that I really admired in him right from the start. And it's natural. That's the thing with Everett. Like, he doesn't, you know, say, you know, you don't look at him and be like, okay, he's now getting ready to go talk to people. Like, he's just a gregarious, you know, positive, energetic person. And it's a tough job that he's got, just the grind. You guys know for the amount of travel the team is. And so I think I bring my energy, and then to have a guy that I know brings his, we keep each other in it the whole time. And that's a real credit to both of us.
I ran into Everett on Friday at KCI, and he had walked out of the, you know, the rink, one of the rinks, and he's there talking to like five or six people. So it's like totally on brand at whoever it is. And we've known him for a while. We've had him on the pod before, and obviously these guys run into him all the time. But yeah, he's almost like a spokesman too, right? So he's got kind of two jobs, I think, at the Kraken. But he's a great piece, and I think you guys work really well together.
Thank you. Yeah, and we're looking forward to it. Like, the beauty of the second year is that, you know, nothing's really you know, strange and new. You know, like in Tampa, you know, there's a weird way to get to the freight elevator, and it takes time. And, you know, so each arena has its own quirk before you even get to the broadcast booth, and then the sight lines and everything else. And so just the comfort level we'll have for all these buildings that I've been to before, but bringing him, you know, with me and saying, okay, you know, this and this amount of time it takes to get to the rink, that sort of thing. And then also now, you know, year two, we were able to reflect back on year one and talk about, you know, remember that game against Edmonton, you know, they came back in the third period and had to kill that penalty at the end and Larson made a big block shot. Like, you know, people that follow the team closely the first year will be like, yeah, I remember that. Yeah. I was... So you know, we get to kind of bring last year to this year and then weave the stories together. And so that's the thing about just building. And I think that'll, you know, whoever has jumped on board throughout this past hockey season, hopefully, you know, gets brought along in that for this next year.
Well, speaking of some of those favorite moments, we went through ours on the podcast a couple episodes ago. I wonder, I mean, you obviously have a different perspective, but what were some of your favorite moments or anything that stuck out from that first year?
I guess going in reverse, I thought it was cool that they finished off the season with a shutout at home and Drieger got that one. You know, that was a nice last game, so to speak, in Climate Pledge. And then, you know, for me personally, that game against Vancouver was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there were a couple of those big wins, like the Washington win was pretty cool. That the Edmonton one sticks out for me because that was their first, you know, win against a Pacific Division team. It had some dramatics to it. And the win in Florida was very surprising. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I kind of thought they were going to win in Buffalo, but I didn't expect two shorthanded goals in the first period. So, you know, those are the games that come to mind.
And when you watch this team, you think about this team, what's kind of your outlook moving forward? And what do you think the focus should be this offseason to get better next year?
Well, I think special teams really let them down. And it's interesting because the guys that played this year have been on other teams' special teams and done well. So I'm not as comfortable giving them a pass, being an expansion team and being, you know, a bunch of new guys playing together, so to speak, because, I mean, there's certain power play formations that work and you get to know your personnel and what their strengths are. And then you, I would think, craft a power play that plays to the strengths of the players that you have. And I just thought that too many times this season, their power play had an opportunity to be a difference maker and was the opposite for them. Same thing with some of the penalty kills. So looking for improvement in special teams for sure. Maybe just year two being together helps that. Maybe it's some tweaks with the coaching. And then I don't dive too deeply into analytics only because, you know, with my line of work, it's really tough to spew them out and have them make sense for people. But when you look at the fact that they didn't give up a lot of shots per game, but yet gave up a lot of goals, and you don't want to specifically just point at the goaltenders and say, okay, that's the reason. So there was some defensive structure that was not getting better as the season went on. So, you know, it's hard to score goals when you're behind in hockey games. And so I think if they're in hockey games longer, then they'll be able to pull out more wins. But, you know, a lot of times they were down two goals halfway through a game and it's just so much energy to come back.
Last question for you, Dave, and you've been great with your time. So thank you very much for doing this, but yeah. You took part in this commercial series that was always on the Jumbotrons, where basically you're encouraging small children to go and injure each other. Just curious, you know, what you have to say for yourself on that front for participating in that.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Get your anger out. They were all protected. They had equipment on. That was the Geico ads. Yeah. And we had a lot of fun. The young girl hockey player that was with me was awesome. And one of the things that they didn't play throughout the entire season was there are a lot of kind of off the cuff lines that they asked me to come up with after I explained the penalty. So like she would do, you know, the charging symbol. And then I would say charging is, you know, when you take a couple of steps or whatever. And then I would look at her and she would look at me. And then I would be something like, the only thing I remember charging is on my credit card. I don't think I paid that off. So we had a bunch of those that I don't think they wanted to put in at the start just to set the pace of, you know, explaining the penalties. But we, every time they'd be like, okay, ad lib something for holding. And I'd be like, so there's still some lost footage that hopefully makes it out. But yeah, that
eventually,
was,
the lost
that
kids.
Was a lot of fun. That was supposed to be kind of like the dodgeball guy, you know, the throwback dodgeball coach. So
No, it was great. We had a good chuckle.
I think
that.
It worked really well because I've always I always worry about, you know, dumbing it down too much, but if you make it fun, right. The seasoned hockey fans aren't offended. Right. Cause they enjoy it. And then the new ones are kind of like, oh, okay. Yeah. Holding whatever, you know?
Yeah. Well, the funnest part for me on that part was that we did myself and the young girl did those clips first. And then they brought the two young hockey players out to do the penalties.
Yeah.
But I had already left. So yeah. I hadn't seen those. And my favorite part is when they do the penalties and then you can hear one of the kids after he hit the other one go, ah, like that or something. So if you listen really closely, there's a couple of like, you know, imagine, you know, come out here and go run that kid.
Yeah. 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 Him. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to give you an elbow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Good stuff. Yeah, we very much enjoyed that every night. So look, I hope they do that again this season. But awesome. Dave, thank you very much for your time and for doing this. And we love the work that you do. So great to have you on.
Thank you. I know we talked a lot kind of about my path and things like that. So if you want to get me back on and do like an intensive scrub of the Kraken after free agency and the draft, have a probably a better outlook on what this team can be. I'd love to come back and join you guys.
That sounds great.
Awesome. Yeah. Let's do it. We'll do it.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Dave. Have a great day.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you again, Dave, for joining us. That was great. And we will take you up on that offer to get you back on the show soon, because I think that was a fun conversation. Yeah, fun. And yeah, we talked for a long time and felt like we only scratched the surface. So looking forward to having you back on soon. We now move on to our segments. And our first segment is a Let's Get Quizzical.
Oh,
yeah. Who's the quiz master? I just...
Yeah.
It's you,
guess,
right, John?
Take a guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Here we go.
All right. So...
I don't know what the topic is.
I know.
You're keeping me in the dark again.
I wanted to ask you guys, but I didn't want you to think about it.
Right.
So...
Okay. It's Johnny Depp Amber Heard trivia.
You nailed it. okay. So the quiz
Pirates
is...
of the Caribbean 2 at World's End. Did I get it?
There was a Kraken in that one, right?
There was. That's right.
All ties together.
The quiz is, who does he play for?
Okay.
Okay. Oh. So... I think these are. I'm gonna give you six names.
Uh-huh.
One at a time.
Okay.
And you have to guess which team he ended the season with in this most recent season.
Okay.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, I like it.
A little bit of a hint.
Mm-hmm.
None of these teams made the playoffs, so these players did not.
None of them made the playoffs. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So, good. I like it. Let's go.
All right. I'm gonna go to Darren first.
Okay.
No stealing, by the way.
Oh.
Okay, no stealing.
Oh. All right. Well, that's lame, but that's fine. Okay. It's your game. You make the rules.
Gustav Nyquist.
Gustav Nyquist. He might have stumped me with the first one.
Remember how much excitement there was over him?
Yeah.
Yes.
Gustav Nyquist. I'm going to go with the Vegas Golden Knights.
That is incorrect.
Can I guess, even though there's no steering?
Sure.
The Ottawa Senators?
No. No. You're thinking of there's another Gustav that went up there.
Gustav Forsling, maybe?
I don't know. I forget. Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Was.
Okay. Sorry. No points. He played with the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Oh, how did I not get that?
Of course. Probably saw two Blue Jackets games this year.
I think he even scored against the Kraken. He had 18 goals. Not bad. So
remember Nyquist the horse?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, Andy.
Remember Nyquist the cold and flu medicine?
Okay.
I do. Yep.
Andy, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Ryan DeZingle.
I can like hear his name.
I think I know this one.
Ryan DeZingle.
You can hear his name.
Hear his name.
Like I can hear a guy. Like I can hear
it. Like on the overhead or something.
Like watching a game on TV. I can hear people talking about him in my head. Okay. Like I know I've heard that this year. God, where was that at? Ryan DeZingle, a non-playoff team. Did he end up in Ottawa?
I think you might have heard it at a certain Tempe City Council meeting, if I'm not mistaken, because I believe he's an Arizona Coyote. Am I correct?
He was an Arizona Coyote, but he finished the season in San Jose.
There was something funky about it. He got like waved, picked up by Toronto, and then sent something weird happened.
Don't come up.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Okay.
All right. We look pretty dumb so far.
Well, and keep in mind, I hand selected these based on like, that's where he plays. So I'm equally as dumb as you guys.
So you're trying to pitch a shutout is what's happening right now.
Theoretically, I
that's fine. If you shut us out, it'll be the first time in quizzical history.
I think you'll get some of these,
but they're always fun.
Yeah, I think you'll get some of these.
Really?
Mike Hoffman. Mike Hoffman.
Mike Hoffman. Non-playoff teams. I'm gonna go with. I truly don't know this one. I'm going to go with the Detroit Red Wings.
No, I'm sorry. The Montreal Canadiens.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But remember, where else was Hoffman this was season? His big trade.
Yeah.
He was not traded midseason. He spent the whole season there. But he was in Florida, I think, spent a year in Florida. He might have had a stop in between.
All right.
Well, yeah, that brief stint in San Jose, right? Like
The 24 hours or something. Yeah. In the offseason. Okay. Andy.
Yeah.
This one's going to be tough.
Like the other ones are so easy. Mark. So this one's going to be tough.
Mark, I have problems with Val's Pissick.
Oh, my God. Wow. I don't think I have any idea. I don't know that I can name one team he played for.
He played for Florida for a while. I thought people would remember him in Florida. But
okay, yeah. That rings a bell.
But they made the playoffs, so.
Did he play for Montreal? Wait, no. Winnipeg. I'm going to guess Winnipeg.
No. Damn. No, he played in Buffalo. Oh. No wonder you didn't remember that. So okay.
Did he play the whole season there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember him playing there. Yep. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Not going well. Continue.
I think if you've got a chance, the next two are going to be the ones. All right. Okay.
These are our last two, right?
Yeah. Even though I'm like, maybe it's a swerve tactic too. So, Oscar Sundqvist, your favorite. Mm.
Sundqvist.
Oh, that's tough because he's not with the Blues anymore, but I don't remember where he went.
I remember Tom Wilson knocking him out in a preseason game like three or four years ago.
So maybe.
But he's not on that team anymore that he got knocked out on.
I'm going to go with non-playoff team. Let's go with the Chicago Blackhawks.
Ooh. Not correct. The Detroit Red Wings.
Ah! Oh!
Yeah.
Man.
This sucks because we probably saw all of these guys.
Yeah. Well, I know. Like, that's why I'm like, I was trying to think. I'm like, did any of these guys score against a Kraken? Because that would have stood out.
I remember hearing his name, too, like watching a Kraken game. Oh, yeah. That guy.
But it might have been when they played St. Louis. Okay. Because he was traded midseason. Okay. Last one for all the marbles.
Yeah.
Jimmy VC.
Oh, my God. Jimmy VC. Did he end up with the Vancouver Canucks? Was he with the Vancouver Canucks at some point?
I don't know. I don't know if he's ever been there, but he wasn't this year.
Buffalo Sabres.
New Jersey Devils.
Okay. All right. Let's never do that again.
Yeah. Sorry, man.
Wow. I thought you were going to throw the Pitlicks at us.
And then you've been like, which Pitlick?
Oh, man.
Oh, but you could have guessed Montreal.
They're all on Montreal. I think
the Pitlicks. One came and had a hat trick against Minnesota. With Minnesota.
All right. I'll do better.
No, it's all right. It was good. You really tested us. Yeah. I'm humbled. It was very humbling.
I didn't mean it.
Let's get quizzical. So the NHL awards happened on Tuesday as well. I think kind of the main highlight awards we'll talk about here. Auston Matthews won the Hart Trophy as the MVP. Cale Makar won the Norris, and it looks like he just edged out Roman Josi. That was pretty close. Matthews also won the Ted Lindsay, which is voted by the players as MVP. And then the Calder Cup went to Mo Sider. I don't think that's much of a surprise. I think he was kind of a leader throughout the year. And then the Vezina was Igor Shesterkin. So I don't think anything really shocked me there. I think it all kind of made sense. Although I was a little surprised. Matthews beat out McDavid by quite a lot of points, I thought, in the vote, which I thought it would be a little bit closer, but Matthews had a huge year.
There could be some McDavid fatigue amongst the voters.
Maybe some McDavid fatigue. Well said. It's a scientific thing that happens. Okay, we now move on to our weekly one-timers.
Whoopsh.
Our first weekly one-timer.
Whoopsh.
Pete DeBoer is once again back behind a bench as the head coach of the Dallas Stars. It is remarkable that this guy, I think he's a good coach, but he keeps getting fired and then quickly picked up like he's this sought-after coach. I find it interesting. Now, he has coached one of the teams that you have followed closely. John, what is your take on Pete DeBoer?
I liked him. I almost don't think he should have been fired in San Jose.
Right.
Certainly shouldn't have been fired in Vegas, I don't think. I mean, I just don't think he had a lot of responsibility there for them having a bunch of injured players. But, you know, it reconnects him with Joe Pavelski.
Oh, sure. Okay.
I think he can get them into the playoffs, and Dallas, to me, is on the brink of being in a complete rebuild, right? Because they've got some aging guys there with Jamie Benn, and Sagan, you know, is still kind of not 100%.
Yeah, I don't know, though. I mean, they have, like, good young talent, too, right? Robertson's really good.
Heiskanen.
Rupe Hintz, Heiskanen, and their goalie is really good, too, Oettinger. Yeah, so.
But the core is still older.
Yeah, you're right.
We'll see. Yeah, you're right. They could kind of... slide in there.
Why does he get fired every after like 3 or 4 years?
Now, that's a good question.
Does he, you know, the players get tired of him? Does he wear out his welcome? I know I didn't think Vegas was his fault. I thought there were injuries and the way that their management handled their roster.
It doesn't handle like goalies problem. Very well.
Mm. Yeah, there was that in,
yeah, in Vegas. Yeah. I don't know, honestly. Like,
cause he took New Jersey to the final. And a kind of a surprise.
Took San Jose to a final.
And then then he goes and takes San Jose to the final. And he was in the conference finals with Vegas. So it's not like he is a one and done guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've always liked him too.
One of life's great mysteries.
Yeah, it
Our
is,
next
isn't it?
Weekly one-timer. Marco Sturm has been hired to coach the AHL's Ontario Reign. Why did this get onto the show notes?
He's German.
Okay. No, this is actually pretty significant because he's German. Yeah.
He's a German national.
Okay.
He's coached the German national team in the past. He was a longtime player for the Sharks. He's been an assistant there for a while.
Mm-hmm. I think he was the head coach at the previous Olympics when Germany got a silver medal.
Yep.
So I think.
So is he the first German head coach?
I can't confirm. He must be,
but I think it's noteworthy that a European is.
Yeah,
is coaching a team in North America a pro?
Like, yeah, okay. It just seems like a untapped market, if you will. Yep. Like it's a market.
Especially a guy who played for so long in North America,
and he's got results. Like he's produced results with Germany, and
So he replaces John Robleski, friend of the pod, who we know he has been hired as the Team USA women's coach. Right?
Yeah,
so
that's right.
That's that. Our next weekly one timer. The Nashville Predators have kind of been sold to former Tennessee governor Bill Haslam. I think the plan is he's going to be the minority owner initially, or one of the minority owners, and then in like a few years he'll become the majority owner.
Yeah, it's almost like a put on layaway.
Yeah.
Where eventually he's going to come up with enough money to...
he's making payments. He's got to make enough payments.
Well, he used a credit card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a local owner. I don't think there's... I mean, Nashville's been like one of the more positive stories around running a hockey team in the last 10 years because there was not too long ago that they were filed bankruptcy. So, and the owner
was
in jail.
They were going to move.
Yeah. And Vasily was taking deposits for... the Hamilton Predators. So they've come a long way, it's kind of good. It's kind of keeps local ownership, so that's kind of cool.
And the final weekly one-timer, the Vancouver Canucks have signed Andrei Kuzmenko, who apparently was like the big free agent out of Europe, which I, for some reason, this wasn't really
never
on
heard
my
of him
radar
before.
At all. Yeah,
second leading scorer in the KHL.
Uh huh.
Behind that former Vegas Golden Knight guy who...
Oh, Gusev.
Yeah. No, not Gusev.
Oh.
The worst one. Sergei Shipachenko.
Oh, Shipachev.
Shipachev. That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
So he's still plugging away. They're excited about this guy in Vancouver, though.
Yeah, I think they plan on playing him alongside Pettersson, who really hasn't had a partner or a running mate. And he was celebrating by wakeboarding in Vancouver this morning.
Yeah, it actually... That. A slight correction there is actually a wake skate. There is a difference between wake skating and boarding. Skating,
you got a board.
It's almost like you're surfing on the wake skating, and you're not.
Why isn't it wake surfing?
That's a good question. Oh, maybe no. I'm pretty sure it's called wake skating. I've never done it before. I have wake boarded, but wake boarding, you're being pulled by a rope. Yeah.
How big is the board on the wake skate?
It is
not
again.
Big.
I've never really done it before. It is.
It's
probably about the size of a wakeboard. Probably not that much smaller.
Yeah, you're just not tethered to the boat.
No, I'm familiar. But is there a difference between wake surfing and wake skating?
Now I tried to look like a know-it-all. And
I know. Now I'm like, I'm not sure that's how it works. And I know my board sports.
Yeah. So Andrei
Kuzmenko. He was on a board riding wake somehow in Vancouver this afternoon.
It looked like fun. Yeah. How's that? Whatever he was doing, it looked like fun. Yeah.
So I also saw, related, but maybe...
Related to water sports?
No.
Okay.
To the signing.
Oh.
Is I saw that Vancouver is listening to offers about Besser and JT Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And this might be part of the reason, right?
And so
expecting
again,
one of them or both of them to leave.
Minnesotans are very excited about the idea of Brock Besser going to play
for
the Wild.
Of course.
Yeah.
What about going back to North Dakota to play?
They don't have an NHL team.
Yeah.
Anyway, those are our weekly one-timers. We are not going to do three stars this week, since last week we were scraping the bottom of the barrel to the point that we all chose a junior player from the same junior team. So we're just going to forego three stars, and we are going to close the show this week with tweets of the week. John, your tweet of the week.
Okay, my tweet of the week is a two-parter.
Uh-huh.
First tweet comes from French's, which is like French's mustard.
Yeah, uh-huh.
But apparently there's ketchup in Canada.
Yes.
Is there French's ketchup in the U.S.?
I think so.
Okay.
I don't know. But I do know that, like, Canada, they love ketchup chips are a big
thing.
Yeah.
So French's tweets, "Hey, Canadian friends, your favorite condiment just got a whole lot cooler. A refreshingly savory and sweet ketchup popsicle made from 100% Canadian tomatoes." Learn more here.
Uh-huh.
And friend of the pod, Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, retweets it and says, "We're never giving the cup back, ever."
This makes me think of, there's a line in Tommy Boy where David Spade's character Richard says, "Yeah, your dad used to be able to sell ketchup popsicles to a lady in white gloves." And that's the only thing that I can think of when I see that, a ketchup. Because at the time you're like, ketchup popsicles? And I think even Tommy's character is like, what? That's ridiculous. Ketchup popsicles. And now they're a real thing. Andy, your tweet of the week.
My tweet of the week is also a two-parter.
Uh-huh.
And it comes from Thomas Drance, who was a longtime beat reporter for the Vancouver Canucks.
He's still there,
so it starts
right?
with Elliot Friedman, huh?
He's still there, right?
Still does with The Athletic, okay. Yeah. Starts, Elliot Friedman had tweeted before the game.
Oh, yeah, I know.
No point in warm-up.
Uh-huh.
Braden Point was hurt. Thomas Drance responds, "I don't know. It helps everyone get loose. Let's the media see the opening lines. Fans enjoy getting pucks and stuff along the glass. I see a point in all that." I thought that was pretty great, and some of the responses are pretty good. Also to Elliot Sweet. If you find Elliot Sweet, people responded pretty good to that.
Yeah. My tweet of the week comes from Lexi Brown, which is, of course, the wife of JT Brown, friend of the pod. Now, there's been a thing going around on Twitter lately, and I'm not really sure where it started, but it's just, they're a 10, but, and then some really stupid thing. Hers, she got on it pretty early on in this kind of stupid gimmick trend that's been going around. So I still thought it was funny at the time. It says, "He's a 10, but collects Funko Pops." Which, if you go back to like 2 years ago and listen to our podcast with JT Brown, you'll understand that he's a big collector of Funko Pops. That's right. Okay, that's our show. Thank you again to Dave Tomlinson for joining us. Thank you all for listening. Please do leave your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and we'll read it on next week's show. Subscribe on Stitcher, subscribe on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, and we'll talk to you all next week for episode 190. Are we on 4? 194. 194. Cheers. We'll be right back.